Wing TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Tuesday, July 13th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Today on Wing TV, we have a special guest, Mr. Eric Hufschmidt, who is the author of this wonderful book, Painful Questions, and also the video that goes with it, Painful Deceptions. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Eric Hufschmidt. How are you doing, Eric?
Welcome, Eric.
Oh, I'm doing great.
Okay, we showed the book that you have, Painful Questions, and I have to say, it is the nicest, the best 9/11 book we think out there. Not only is the content super, but as everyone can see, it's full-color, glossy pages. It's just a fantastic book, so we'd like to commend you on that.
Well, great. Yeah, it's an amazing reaction, though, to it, is what I find, is the silence about it all.
Well, you know, I spent the whole morning going through your book, and I found it so incredibly well put together, easy to read and understand, and I can't for the life of me understand why people would be so silent, except for maybe a reason that you listed at the end of the book, that so many people are in denial.
Yes, that's all you can explain it. Because what it feels like is reminds me of when I was a kid and you're in a dark room and you're scared to death to even walk into the place.
Uh-huh.
And you're like running and, you know, going back to mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we get started, Eric, tell everyone how they can find your website.
Well, mine is just my name. I don't have any great website name. It's just my name, erichufschmidt.net.
And that's also, we'll give that at the end of the show also. And I guess to get started, Eric, everybody knows the official version, the official government / mainstream media version of 9/11. In a nutshell, give us your version of what really happened on the morning of 9/11.
Well, what it appears to me is that, first of all, the Arabs were just patsies. They were just there for the show. They weren't really pilots. They weren't necessarily even on the airplanes. They were... That portion of it was just to fool us. And what sort of planes hit, I don't know. I suppose they were remote controlled rather than a human pilot. And the towers in Building 7 had already been preset with explosives up and down them completely to destroy them. So that after the planes came in and there was that initial fireball in the fire and the people got out, then they set off the explosives to make it look as if the buildings were just falling down due to the airplane crashes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, meanwhile, we also have the Pentagon being attacked. And you have that. Here again, there's no sign that there was any Arab pilot. There was no sign it was even a Boeing 757.
Right.
It looks like some drone of some sort, remote controlled, was being brought in there. And then Flight 93, of course, is another strange one, since we have reports that pieces were scattered everywhere, and the official site where the plane crashed, the mayor of Shanksville is saying he didn't see any plane parts or pieces of luggage or people.
Eric, I was very happy throughout the book, over and over again, you refer to the rubble and the lack of analyzation involving the wreckage and the rubble at the site. And I would like you to talk about that. I'm so happy you mentioned that repeatedly throughout the book, because I've brought this up before, too. It's why wasn't there any investigation of the rubble? Why was it cleaned up and carted off? And don't we have laws to prevent this sort of thing from happening?
Yes, and what's interesting is that it's not just us talking about it. What's the most bizarre is that the Fire Engineering magazine even had an article about this, a very angry, sarcastic article in January of 2002. This is just a couple months later, and he's basically yelling at the government, this is illegal, you can't
right.
do this. And he says in his article, he looked through the laws just to see, well, maybe there's an exception to the rule. And he says he can't even find an exception. So what they did was illegal. If you've ever seen a car accident or any sort of major crime, the police run in there and chase everybody away. It's evidence of the crime. They sometimes put up their little plastic strips, you know, police sight, get away, whatever that wording is. Here, not only did the police surround the building, but they were doing the exact opposite. They were letting in the crews with the torches get in to cut the stuff up and sell it as scrap metal. They're doing the exact opposite of what they normally do, which which is to protect it.
Well, I know when we were talking to Art Bell about a month ago, and he said, well, he wants some kind of proof. Well, as you bring out so clearly in your book, the proof was all carried away within the first couple hours or first couple days. There is no proof because they got rid of all the proof.
They ensured there would be no further investigation.
Right. They were there that same day, cutting it up, hauling it away, and selling it. I mean, it's bad enough if they just picked it up and buried it, but here they are selling it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were in a car accident, you turn around and you see the police are out there letting people cut your car up and sell it as scrap metal?
Sell it as scrap, yeah.
It's beyond, it's so blatant.
Mm-hmm.
It's just right in your face. It's just they're just going to haul this stuff away, and people are yelling, stop it. You can't do that. It's ignore it.
Yeah. Now, I know that you have a theory that there were two different implementers on the morning of 9/11. There was one team of implementers that did the attack on the World Trade Centers and another on the Pentagon. And the World Trade Center, even though there are still a lot of holes in it, at least the World Trade Center isn't as a mess as the Pentagon. The Pentagon's just like a big block of Swiss cheese. There's so many holes in the story that none of it adds up. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, the two different implementers as you see them?
Well, what strikes me as interesting about this attack is that the World Trade Center attack really shows signs of intelligence. The people who did that, it's not just intelligence, but they work together, because that one is so well coordinated, so well planned. I mean, it's obvious that it's a scam. I'm not saying that they disguised it well, but they did it well. It's the execution and the,
yes,
and the planning of the planes hitting and the demolition of those explosives, and then the control they had after it was done, the control over the fire department, the police department, the media. And then you look at the Pentagon attack. You've got nothing about it making sense. It's so bad. You've got an airplane flying at 400 miles an hour, inches above cars, knocking over light poles. Nobody can even fly a plane like this, let alone a Boeing 757. It is so unrealistic. They had no provisions for what do you do about the plane parts or the luggage or the bodies.
Mm.
It seems as if the people who planned that were either incredibly stupid or they thought they were running an exercise and they were just taken advantage of. Whereas World Trade Center, that does not look like somebody was just taken advantage of. They looked like they knew what they were doing.
Well, who do you think these two different factions are, the World Trade Center faction and the Pentagon? Who do you think carried it out?
Well, when you look at the World Trade Center, you have a lot of people like Silverstein and Frank Lowy, and you get a lot of the connections with, I guess you'd call it Zionism, or some of the, who knows exactly who else, but I mean, that's where you can see also all throughout history, people who work together, people who, so you've got to get, in order to do that World Trade Center, you need two things that, one is you need to have the intelligence and the technical skill, and the other is you have to have people who can work together, and they really fit that category. You know, they will work together for the benefit of their group.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you look at the Americans, I mean, get a group of Americans together all throughout American history, it's just been fighting and who's doing more work and who's got the fanciest job title and who's getting paid the most. And,
Eric.
Yes?
Let's talk for a moment about Building 7. We don't hear as much about that building as the other towers, but it had a potentially hazardous situation going on in it with thousands and thousands of gallons of diesel fuel, creating a potentially, you know, dangerous catastrophe in itself. But also, talk about the 23rd floor.
The building was full of, quite a few tanks of diesel fuel near the base for electric generators. Now, there's a lot of buildings that do this. Even hospitals have their tanks of diesel fuel for backup generators. The strange thing about this building is it had so much of it. It's like 40, it had a potential of like 40,000 gallons. And it had the electric power backup capability was phenomenal. I mean, you could power a little city from this thing. So it makes you wonder, what was this thing doing with so much power? Was it just because there was really that much equipment in there, or what? It's a big mystery because there's no one really explaining it.
The 23rd floor, you think, was actually the command center for the World Trade Center attacks.
Yes, on the 23rd floor. See, this was an ordinary office building, but on that 23rd floor, they decided to make it into like a reinforced military bunker. This was back, they finished the work in 1999 at about $15 million. So what they had done is they gave it windows that were bulletproof and bomb resistant. But the strange thing is that it was designed with its own air supply and its own water supply, and it had protection against 160 mile per hour wind.
Hmm.
Now, what good does it do you to make one floor of a building
right.
with protection from wind like that if the rest of the building doesn't have it?
But you bring up a good point also, that it had a perspective, a vantage point, where they could view the other towers and know exactly when to set off explosives.
Right. They would also know where the towers were hit by the airplanes, because if they didn't know exactly where they were going to hit, they would need to know that in order to set the computers to detonate those explosives properly. So they needed to see the tops of the towers, plus they needed to see the base. So because the people who did this apparently let everybody out of those towers. They were deliberately reducing casualties.
Mm-hmm.
And so how else can you possibly do that? You have to be there. Someone had to be there to be saying, you know, my initial thought was somebody who was on the ground with a radio, but, you know, this makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
To think that somebody was up there just watching it all, and here they are. You look at this building. It's got air supply. I mean, it's perfect.
Yes.
All right. That's one of the big revelations of this book. I'm showing it again here, Painful Questions. And with the command center on the 23rd floor of World Trade Center, number 7, I guess now the big $64,000 question, the question that everybody, I think, is failing to confront this: who ultimately was behind these attacks? I mean, we hear, you know, vague references to the Mossad or the neocons or the CIA or the Pentagon, but there have to be individuals that were ultimately pushing the buttons or calling the shots. Who do you think those were? Do you have any idea?
I find it as confusing as the rest of the people. Because I think what's really happening is the people really behind the scenes, we don't see them. We only see some of the people that they're getting to come up front. I mean, you know, some people must be involved, like Jerry Hauer, Larry Silverstein. Some of these people have to know what's going on. They
uh-huh.
have to be involved. But and there's companies that are even look like they're involved, like Controlled Demolitions. But who's pulling the strings at the very top is anyone's guess. I mean, there was a remark I saw from that Israeli journalist Barry Chamish, who was accusing Ariel Sharon of being the mastermind. But see, you don't really, I don't know how anybody could ever figure it out. And
yeah.
I think they deliberately bring lots of people and governments in so that just to confuse the issue.
Yeah, there's so many similarities to the Kennedy assassination where it just becomes, you know, a big jumbled mess to find who's really at the top. And there's not going to be a document that says, we called the shots. So
yeah.
You know, anyone that asks for proof, it's almost like a loaded question because they know there's not going to be any.
Exactly. And see, this is one of the things I think goes on, is that they deliberately lure other government officials into these things. And then they may not be doing much, but it's just that now they're in it. And so anybody who looks into this just finds it's just people after people and government after government. There may even be some French government officials involved.
Mm-hmm.
See, the French, this is the other thing. Those French people that filmed the tower being hit, I mean, is this a coincidence? What are the chances that that was a coincidence?
Yeah.
It's as if they deliberately let people know some of this, get them involved, so that anyone who looks into this starts realizing this is a mess. How can you figure it out?
Right.
You also get into the oddities surrounding Todd Beamer's and Barbara Olson's cell phone calls.
Yes. The strange thing about Todd Beamer is he's got a pregnant wife at home, and he's got kids, and he's worried about his life. So what does he do? He talks to a Verizon operator he has never met. And he's doing it not just for a few minutes. And the operator apparently is even saying, according to her, she's saying to him, well, should I connect you with your wife? No, I don't really want to talk to her. I mean,
yeah, actually.
And then he tells her, well, tell my wife I love her. It's like, why don't you tell her? It's your wife.
Right. Supposedly he talked longer than any of the other people who made phone calls. He talked 13 minutes.
Yes, and he never hung up, which is another funny thing. He never hung up. He says, he basically puts the phone down and says, we're going to go get those hijackers. I'm going to put the phone down. And what is he going to do after that? Let's assume they defeat the hijackers. What's he going to run back to the Verizon operator? Oh, wow, we just got the plane back.
was his wife ever actually, did she ever hear the actual tape, or was it just like a fax or a
No, Verizon sent them a fax, didn't they?
Yes, this is another thing. They recorded his conversation, but they don't even let his wife hear it. They send her a fax. Now, you've got to picture yourself at home. You get a fax. Oh, by the way, your spouse is dead, and he says he loves you. I mean, this is coming in from a fax machine.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say this alone is rude, if nothing else.
Yeah, tasteless.
Yeah. Now, I know that we've talked before, and there is somewhat of a 9/11 truth movement out there, but there's problems facing all of us that are trying to get at the truth here. One is that we don't have any type of organization whatsoever. The second is that some of these 9/11 groups, I mean, I saw right when Michael Manure's movie came out, that they actually, they wanted to have a Michael Moore / John Kerry for president party after the showing of the film. So they're so totally off base that, but what do you see as the main problem with the 9/11 truth movement? I mean, we're not working together. There's no promotion. There's no anything. It's like everyone's just on their own little trip.
Yeah, well, it seems like if you look at the big groups with money like MoveOn, what they remind me of is they're just more corrals for the sheep to get put into. It's like they just control you. They've already got control of the opposition. And then you go to these groups, you're not really learning anything. You're not encouraged to learn. You're not encouraged to research any issue. You're not encouraged to discuss issue. You just sit there like a sheep, and they say, here's what you're going to know. And that's it. I mean, that's the same as sitting at home with CNN or Fox News. You're not learning anything. They're not doing anything. And what it looks like is all the money that's going into the 9/11 movements and the anti-war movements, it's all a farce to just keep people under control.
I agree completely.
I'd like to get back for 1 minute to those phone calls. You also mentioned in your book that you think that these could have been CIA agents actually making these calls to give it more realism.
That's one thing. I also had another one, but people don't like hearing it, is that some of those people may have been real. Todd Beamer's phone call, it may have really been Todd Beamer.
Uh-huh.
People don't like this possibility because I guess it's so, it's kind of sad, but think about this now. Imagine the FBI comes to this group of people getting onto the plane and they say to you, you know, there's someone's trying to hijack this plane. We want to stop them. Could one of you make a few phone calls and pretend that the plane was hijacked so that we can help figure out who these people are? You know, someone like Todd Beamer might say, yeah, I'll help you. And they'll bring him over to this room, and he makes a phone call. But all it is he's pretending that he's hijacking. Of course, he doesn't want to talk to his wife.
Right.
Because he's not going to want to scare her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wouldn't want to call his real wife and say, yeah, I'm hijacked, because that would just cause panic to her. So they say, here, you can call a Verizon operator, pretend your plane's been hijacked. Of course, after they're done with him, you know, he's like, nice, thanks a lot, Todd Beamer, and then, you're dead.
Yeah.
I mean, see, this is the thing I don't think people like to think. That was my original thought. I think I edited it out after my dad was complaining, you can't put this in the book. But I think that could have been what was going on. Some of those people may have been CIA agents, and some of them may have been the real people, just thinking they were going along with a plot to catch a hijacker.
Yeah. Well, I know in your book you methodically cover every aspect of 9/11. I mean, you go through the military stand down, the fires, how they weren't hot enough, explosives in the building, the Pentagon scam. What do you think out of everything is the number one smoking gun, that if we could get this out to the masses, so to speak, what's the number one smoking gun that just blows the lid off of this ruse?
Well, to me, it was the collapse of Building 7, but what I find is different people are actually finding different things to be most important. And I also find that even though, to me, the Building 7, I mean, the way that came down, a demolition right in front of your face at 5:30 in the evening, to me that is so blatant.
Yeah.
Yet some people, there was this one guy who asked his brother-in-law, who's a civil engineer, well, what caused Building 7 to come down then if it wasn't explosives? And he says, well, a lot of dust from the towers fell on top of the building. I mean, it's what's the most shocking to me is a lot of this stuff is so blatant, and yet
people buy it.
Yeah, they don't want to deal with it. People are, you know, see, if you want to understand this, you can look at and you can see it in yourself. Imagine yourself dressing up in clothing and hairstyles from just a couple centuries ago and trying to walk around in public like that without.
Right.
It's so difficult. connected emotionally to do that sort of thing.
And, you know, Building 7 also housed some very important government agencies like the CIA, right?
Yeah, they had the Department of Defense, and there were some, there was supposedly some possibly crime, a lot of crime information in there, evidence and crime. You know, there were some investigations that the government was doing, maybe some Enron stuff too.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of important papers destroyed in there.
Yeah.
And then Building 6 has a big hole in it, and there was customs. U.S. Customs had a lot of information on some of their court cases in there, and a lot of evidence, and that's all gone.
Yeah. Well, Eric,
Towers also.
Yeah. Well, before we get going, tell everyone again how they can find your website. Spell it out for them so they know for sure.
Oh, this website's my name, E-R-I-C, and the last name, H-U-F, like Frank, S, like Sam, chmid.net.
That's erichuffschmidt.net. And again, he's author of Painful Questions and also the excellent video, Painful Deceptions. Well,
Eric, I could talk to you about this stuff for hours and hours.
Yes.
I'm so proud of what you've compiled here and what you're doing.
And we think everybody out there should get a copy of this book. This is not only, as we say, high quality in content, but also just the look of it. It's beautiful. So before we go, Eric, if you had 60 seconds or so on the CBS Evening News or on Fox or CNN, and the whole world was watching, what would you tell the American people about 9/11?
Well, to me, the most important message, I don't know if you could put it on CBS, is that the people in this, we have to start dealing with the fact that all governments are crummy. The voters are not being serious. The people, you know, we have to stop all of this hating of Bush and start realizing this government in our country is what we make it. We're not helpless victims. We can do something if we want, but we have to face these problems. We have to start dealing with the fact that most people will follow each other. This is not something to be ashamed of. It's the way humans are. And we have to start dealing with these issues. I mean, we can hate Bush all we want, but somebody is going to get control of these people if we don't start dealing with these problems.
Right. That's something we've been saying for so long. It's we have to get beyond these divide-and-conquer tactics that they've been using on us for so long.
And beyond the denial. Beyond the denial.
Yeah.
Right.
And just start, you know, coming together and saying that this is our country and it's very close to slipping away from us. So, Eric, thank you very much for not only the books, for writing them, but for being on our show today.
Thank you, Eric, for taking the time.
It's so enlightening. And tomorrow.
There's somebody's out there willing to talk, so nice talking to you guys.
Yeah,
we're always talking about it.
And that's erichuffschmidt.net. Tomorrow on Wing TV, we're going to have Douglas Valentine, author of The Phoenix Program, another wonderful book. So, Eric, thank you once again.
And Eric has a word of advice to everybody. If you know any information about what happened on 9/11, don't call the FBI.
Thank you. We'll be back again tomorrow on Wing TV.
See everyone.